Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
With Larkin, Florensky, and Jack Hughes.
Here comes McKinnon as well.
Here's McDavid moving in on Jack Hughes. Tries to slow him down. Puck lines up behind the net. And it's Florensky. Now Jack Hughes puts it around the car. United States with numbers. Back across it comes. Jack Hughes wins it. The golden goal for the United States. For the first time since the 1980 miracle, the United States takes the gold. Jack Hughes beating Jordan Binnington.
Welcome to another Golden Hour of Hockey Talk 2026, clearly the year for USA Hockey on the men's and women's side. This is Sabres Live, and we'll get to the Sabres who are back on the practice ice and ramping up for a return to action on Wednesday, but impossible not to lead with the culmination of the Olympic Games, and golden all the way for both teams that we have talked about extensively, not only for weeks, but for a long time based on local connections and what have you. And congratulations to both the men and women of Team USA.
And we'll start with the men, obviously. That was a spectacular final going to the OT between Team USA, Team Canada. The way that this game was played, the speed and the intensity right from the get-go, it was awesome. I said the round stage of the Olympics for me was like a 6 out of 10 because you had Canada in their own group. You had USA in their own group. You had Finland and Sweden in the middle group, but Sweden wasn't really playing well. And I'm like, it hasn't given me the impact that I wanted to see, but it's the group stage. It's like that at the World Championship and the World Junior sometimes until the one big game. The quarterfinals was exciting. Mm-hmm. 3 games in overtime. The semifinal, especially when you look at Canada and Finland, the way Canada came back to score late. Even Slovakia, you're looking at them giving the U.S. a bit of a push. But we had the dream final. We all wanted to see Canada-USA. And I was surprised. I'm very surprised how Canada was not able to get more than one goal. They missed glorious opportunities. But got to give Connor Hellebuyck so much credit for the way that he played and backstopped that to a gold medal. It's like Ashek in 98.
You're taking the words out of my mouth. It's not unlike the first time that the NHL participated in these Olympic Games. And it's funny because producer Sam could validate this, but it was likely less than a month ago where we had a Sabres Live poll. Which of these goaltenders is going to have the greater career legacy when it's all said and done?
Oh, yeah.
And Connor Hellebuyck was so far in fourth on that list, mm-hmm. despite more Vezinas and all the rest of it. And, of course, we hinted at, well, maybe it'll look different after the Olympics for him.
It does.
It really looks different now for a guy who's won 3 Vezinas, was the top goaltender of the Olympic Games. And
MVP.
Because they, meaning the U.S., were so dramatically outshot that it's impossible to not talk about Connor Hellebuyck for now the history of time as it relates to USA's 2026 gold medal.
Imagine we talked about Ryan Miller in 2010 and the performance as an MVP of the tournament. Now Connor McDavid, again, like he wins the MVP of the tournament in a losing manner, just like he won the Conn Smythe in a losing manner. It's tough for Connor McDavid now, back-to-back Stanley Cup Finals lost and the Olympic loss. But when you're looking at the
good American picture, player skating by here.
I mean, we just did something. You're going to see it soon on Marty Takes On with Matthias Samuelson. It was awesome. But when you look at Connor Hellebuyck.
2030 for Sammy, by the way.
2030, that's what he said. Okay, that's good.
I'm starting the campaign now.
He could very well be.
I started it 3 weeks ago, if I'm being honest.
Listen, if the way Team USA build their team, and there was some criticism to Bill Guerin going in, is that, and the way Team USA played their first 3 games, it was slow starts, finish strong, whatever, right?
Right, but if they don't get the goaltending, that criticism's going to be rampant today.
Rampant.
Right, and guess what? Canada chose Tom Wilson, and they didn't win. Is it Tom Wilson's fault? No.
No.
But that's what happens when you don't stand on the right side of that razor-thin margin.
The book has some already predetermined storylines, but some of them are not going to be used, and some of them will.
Yeah.
Like, at the end of the day, if you ask me before the tournament, Canada doesn't win gold, why? The number one thing would have been goaltending. It wasn't goaltending because Jordan Binnington was good in the tournament.
Tell me what happened to him on the winner. Did he think it was going to be an elevated puck?
A little bit. There's a lot to digest here.
Right.
I think that he felt, number one, maybe Nathan MacKinnon was going to get to the puck and be able to make a play
Nathan
on the puck.
Nathan hesitated, right?
He hesitated, and he didn't go for the puck. It almost like he was thinking, how can I get that puck and create some offense instead of defending first?
Right.
He hesitated, and then he didn't get to the puck. So now,
think about that for a second. How the fastest players in the world, because McDavid and MacKinnon were closest to the goal against.
And Makar was on the ice, too.
But not the closest to the net. Pulled a Larry Murphy.
get me away from the net.
Isn't it crazy that the fastest players, with the slightest of hesitations, can lead to that?
So that happened. MacKinnon hesitating on that puck, first of all. Then Werenski gets the puck. Mm-hmm. And I watched Jordan Binnington. And I rewatched the goal a few times. And I'm like, ooh, this happened. Binnington somehow decides to go reverse VH in that situation. Mm-hmm. Almost surprised, like, oh, Werenski may attack from the corner. I got to get in that position. Mm-hmm. Werenski passes over 20-30 Team Canada for Peyton Krebs, too. So he's shaking
his head. honest reaction.
He's like, I had that reaction many times in my career, too. So anyway, he goes reverse VH off the side.
Yeah.
And he's like, maybe I'm going to get a low attack. Uh-huh. And when the pass is made to Jack Hughes, he doesn't get up. He kind of slides over and keeps gliding, which, unless you're 100% sure where the puck's going to go, mm-hmm. when you're gliding up, holes are going to open. Mm-hmm. And he thought it was going to be glove, and it slides on their knee, and it's 5-0, and it's game over. But again, who is the best forward, and maybe the best player other than Connor Hellebuyck for Team USA the whole tournament? I think it was Jack Hughes. From the first game, he was flying, he was dancing, he was creating offense, he was shooting the puck.
Yeah.
Like that goal that Quinn Hughes got it back to Jack, he shot, mm-hmm. and there was the deflection in front of the net. I don't remember who tipped it.
I mean, you're probably not wrong, obviously. I just feel like the USA showed incredible balance throughout, to the point where you could have this discussion for a lot of days. Like, who was
Jack Eichel with the Tkachuks the by far and away the best line of the group? No.
But
not like Canada, McDavid, Celebrini.
But Jack's role and everything he did, yes. right? Like, that's the
thing. But even Matthews, Gensel, Boldy, were they by far and away better than Larkin, Thompson, and whoever was there?
Isn't that the whole point of how you construct a roster? And again, it's quote-unquote easier for Canada and the U.S. to assemble these rosters and not have to worry who's going to be the number one line, because on any given shift in any period,
they're number one on their team.
Right, exactly. So, but I applaud the U.S. for, you know, how they played, but also how they were constructed. And I take back, obviously, what my concern was going into the tournament, if we were going to, you know, criticize or suggest that, well, they should have taken Caulfield or like, I'm a Caulfield guy, have been before his draft. And who knows, would the U.S. have been better in regulation and won it in regulation if Cole Caulfield, clutch guy, had stepped up with a couple of third-period goals and they win it that way? Maybe.
Caulfield is like Jack Hughes. He can change the game like that.
My concern was this talk about power play and penalty kill, because we know no matter who was being put out there for either team, you're going to have elite power plays.
Dude.
And my thought was, I don't think there's going to be that many penalties called, so I don't, and I was wrong. I was so wrong. Late game situations in the
high
medal
sticks,
round,
high stakes
and high sticks, and incredible need for penalty killers in the U.S.
U.S. were perfect.
They went perfect. So,
and they killed a 5-on-3 for a minute 40.
So, and who killed it? Did the goalie kill it? Did Canada's shooters kill it themselves?
I actually think that
it doesn't matter, but the
USA got the puck down the ice 3 times on that 5-on-3.
Right.
It was great. Mm-hmm. And like, did I think that JT Miller had a big impact on the game? Nah, not so much. I think Trocheck had a better impact.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the way that they build their lines, and I'm like, Kyle Connor, I feel bad for, but he was invisible at the beginning of the tournament.
Which is easy to do sometimes when you're playing, you know, mismatched talent levels. I get that. But did you not think, I obviously see almost everything we talk about through a Sabre lens. That's the whole point of it. If you're talking about penalty kill and Miller's and Trocheck's, and I get it, maybe their body of work is a little bit bigger, but you could have easily seen Alex Tuch in that
100%.
Role, right? And that's where you can always have this debate, and it's the greatest luxury and praise that you can bestow upon USA Hockey now, is that they clearly have so much depth. This is the greatest evolution of the game from this country's standpoint, is that they can ice USA 2 and USA 3. We never used to be able to say that. And this is not a surprise based on for how long the U.S. has dominated or come close to dominating every World Junior the last 15 years, right? It's either the U.S. or the Finns or Canada, seemingly, right? That's like Sweden wins the round robin every year.
It's the ADM program that USA Hockey put in when I remember my son was maybe, he's an 04 birth, so 2009, 2010 maybe, they decided to kind of go to small area games. Yeah. Skill development, work on this, and then put the national development program together and all of that. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing it like 16, 17 years later. Awesome. It's really paying off. So Team USA has done an awesome job. But you go back to 96 World Cup or even the 98 Olympics or 2002, 2006 Olympics or whatnot. And Team USA was like Finland, was like Sweden. They had good players, but they didn't have the depth to compete with Russia and Canada. Now they do, and now that makes a big, big difference for what they can do. And listen, if I had to put together like a 2028 World Cup of hockey and a 2030 Olympic hockey, I'm looking at USA now, and I'm saying they've got guys coming through that will be there and could be very, very much in the gold medal conversation for the next 10, 15, 20 years.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Who's had the better career, Jack Eichel or Connor McDavid?
Well, I will say, like, hardware-wise, like team hardware, is Jack
does
Eichel.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Because he has a cup. He now
and
has
a gold medal.
And a gold medal.
And McDavid has, again, this is not personal and it's not real in the sense of obviously McDavid is McDavid. Mm-hmm. But isn't it crazy when Jack was in the draft year and what he said to the Sabres and the comparisons and, you know, well, it's amazing how it's turned out. Like McDavid, yes, they won the Four Nations. I get it. But he's had consecutive Stanley Cup finals where he's been on the wrong side of it and now a gold medal game. And in any of those situations, you're not blaming Connor McDavid. Obviously.
And you can never take that away from those who won. Like, Tage Thompson comes back with a gold medal.
Yes.
Like, how big is that going to be in that locker room starting whenever he comes back? Because, you know, number one, they couldn't fly into New York because of the storm in the East Coast. So they all flew into Florida, I believe. There may be some appearances that Team USA is going to have to do. Mm-hmm. The plan is that he'll probably meet the team in New Jersey on Wednesday, but who knows when he'll be able to play or available to play.
Yep.
What's best for him, too? Like, do you want to throw him in on Wednesday? He's dealing with a lower body injury.
This, that, or the other. Thompson plays, Hughes plays, neither play.
I'm saying neither play.
Okay.
Wednesday night. Well, first of all, Jack Hughes
has
to get.
That's unfortunate.
But I'm going to say that that's hard. You just battled for 2 weeks.
And travel.
Traveled. Like, maybe you just take the first day, like everybody that's playing on Wednesday, like maybe you don't. Maybe the earliest you could see Team Canada or Team USA players get back at it would be Thursday.
Where were you when the USA won?
On my couch.
Yeah.
Where were you?
You're going to love this.
On a plane?
No.
Plane, trains, and
I was driving on Ontario's beloved 401.
Oh, yeah.
And as you also know, I don't have any subscriptions to many media services.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So it's not like I'm driving around. I got, you know, Sirius XM or whatever, right? So I'm scanning the dial.
Oh, for the AM call?
Yeah. But what did I find?
What did you find?
FM version, French radio.
Oh, you did?
Listen to it on, I'm assuming SRC. Is that still exist or not?
Yeah, that still exists, but it may have been something else that would have the radio.
Let me just say, the hockey cliches that I grow tired of sounded much better in French. And what brings this back to the Sabres is, for me, because of growing up in Southern Ontario and having a devoted national French channel always available, and so few games being televised when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
The blessing was that the Sabres and Canadiens were in the same division.
Yes.
And on Saturday nights, the only way to get the Sabres games was to watch it in French.
Yep.
And so I have spent so much time in my life seeing Sabres games or hearing Sabres games on French radio or television. So I thought it was hilarious. And it's an easy game.
But you can feel the energy and the ups and flows.
It's easy to follow it that way. And
it's like watching a soccer game in Spanish or something or in a different language. It's like you know what's going on.
Yeah. And you know you're in a good one when you hear, ay, ay, ay.
Ay, 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 that's a mistake. Yes, that's a turnover. Kale McCarr, the pinch, ay, 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 right? Like, whatnot. But so, anyway, Team USA to men, a great tournament.
Yeah, but the women set the stage.
The
women. Oh, my goodness.
Let me tell you, that team is potentially the best ever women's teams assembled. And got to give credit to Anne-Renée Desbiens, goalie for Team Canada, Marie-Philippe Poulin, who basically played on one leg, and Team Canada being up 1-0 all the way until 1.5 and Team Canada had chances to go up 2-0, maybe even 3-0, and Frankel did awesome in net for Team USA, but that game was exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And when Hillary Knight, who else, to
who
score
else?
That game-tying goal, right, and put that to overtime, I was... That one had me even more on pins and needles, I think, than the men's game.
Yeah.
Because it was unexpected a little bit that that game was going to be close. I thought it was going to be a 5-0
Well, of course it's more dramatic because there's a lead. Somebody's in a lead with less than 3 minutes to go, right?
Yes.
The men's game is tied, and you're waiting. You know what I mean?
Like, but there's also a lead in because they played 4 games in the rivalry series,
yes.
1 game in the group stage.
Yeah.
There's been 5 games being played leading up to that one.
Mm-hmm.
And U.S. had won every one of them
and then some,
by a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then you're like, ooh, Canada's in the lead, right? 1-0. That game was awesome. So obviously, Haley's Kimura, Buffalo's own, getting the gold medal. That's very exciting.
Yeah, and obviously, Sabres return to action on Wednesday. Noah Osland rolling by right now. Mm-hmm. And
I also did something with Noah last week.
Well,
that's going to be on Marty Takes On.
Marty Takes On?
Yeah, it's a new feature. We'll see that probably in the next few weeks here. One of them.
On what platform?
It's going to be on social on social and sabres.com.
So I'll see it next year.
No, I'll send you the clip.
Okay,
don't
thanks.
Worry. But it's like getting to know these guys in the different. I did one in the weight room, which put me through a workout. That was not easy.
You are looking good. I should have complimented you.
Thank
right
you.
Off the top.
I appreciate it. That's because you didn't see me in
one
two
and
weeks.
Done.
That's what it is. And I did one with Matthias Samuelson and Noah Osland.
Amazing.
Just on Thursday, so that was a lot of fun.
The reason I mentioned Noah, not only are the players gliding by here on wheels after their skate over at Harbor Center, it sounds like with Josh Norris ready to come back, that him skating with Osland and Doan is a distinct possibility.
Yes.
And I think that does, you know, if you're not just sitting here salivating about hockey because of what you just witnessed and the return to it in NHL form this week. And by the way, 3 and 4 nights for the Sabres, mm-hmm. Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, all on the road before returning home next week.
25 games in 51
like,
days.
Do you not get, it's got to be more than that. It's
one every other day plus one.
I think it's
25 games in 51 days.
Oh, 51. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
sorry.
Every other day plus one. I think
think you're exactly right. Just blurting out those three names together and then knowing, you know, we're going to be talking about everybody. Like, that has me super excited. Like, I'm not a big fan of the break. Never have been honest. That's been my stance the mm-hmm. whole time. It is what it is. Olympics ended up being great. I didn't want the Sabres season to pause, but now we're coming out of it. They're in wild card one. They're 2 points out of second in the division.
Yes.
Lukanen's healthy. Norris is healthy. Dunn is healthy. Benson, not so much. We're not going to see him on the trip this week despite practicing. By the way, trade deadline is March 6th. So, like, you're going to get hit head-on here with an awful lot of hockey stories beyond the games that actually get played on the ice.
It'll be interesting for me. You mentioned Benson will not play this week, so he'll miss Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. He's dealing with, as Lindy Ruff pointed out, an upper body as well as a shoulder, so... You know, the double upper body situation.
Little Bo Byram.
Little Bo Byram salute there.
It wasn't even a high stick. You know, it was below the shoulders.
It's a not so much of a goat crossing as RJ once did, but still very good.
Dude, I think we need to have this camera location more often and the proximity to the guys.
Yeah, no, they could all come in and stop on the show if they wanted to.
You notice we
were just talking about, you know, Josh Doan and his line mates.
Big
so,
fail,
yes.
Sammy. Producer Sam, big fail on our part. We should have had a live mic off to the side here. Could have had random drop-ins for the crew. Owen Powers
or
getting
what
by
we could
right
have
now.
Done is move this location up so they all had to go behind us.
And there's a reason we're here at the arena because our friends, a trusted talent, presented a big day for us today and had a ton of volunteers from their group and our Sabres group, and we're going to dive into that in the back half of our show. But it was frantic here a couple hours ago in an effort to help our community. So we're going to dive in on
yes.
that, and it's really great to be back here.
Just quickly on the lines, though, I think we're done coming back and, you know, like kind of seeing it, I think Peyton Krebs becomes, again, that utility knife, that Swiss Army knife. Mm-hmm. He could play in Benson's spot, maybe. Yeah. With Tage and Tuck, maybe if Tage is not in the lineup Wednesday, maybe that's another place for Krebs to be in. Like, there's so much you can do, but more bodies, healthier bodies, that's all we want to see for the Sabres continue on that 25-game stretch.
They're still not 100% healthy, obviously.
Especially on a back end.
And that's the thing. So with the trade deadline March 6th, and we're not seeing Connor Timmins yet, Metsä is back up after being assigned to the Amerks and had points down there. I was there Friday calling the game with Don. Ended up being a loss in overtime to Laval, who are on, again, another incredible point streak. The Amerks have been chipping away. They're holding their own. They've still got eyes on second in the division, but they're closer to fifth at the moment. It's just the nature of the North. Yeah. But Metz is back, and Kesselring is, we're going to be talking about this again, still trying to find his footing and consistency and impact for this group. So with March 6th looming for all teams in a trade deadline, like, what is your gut telling you right now?
Well, I'm looking at depth on the blue line as something that Jarmo Kekäläinen, the general manager, is going to try to address moving forward. They got so many forwards right now. Even if you wanted to bring back Constantine Hellenius, that could play a role. Jordan Greenway is a big question mark because, obviously, he's still dealing with, you know, what was ailing him with the two surgeries, and there's still some question marks there. But, which, by the way, you mentioned Kesselring. When Quinn Hughes was talking about Jack Hughes and how hard it's been for Jack Hughes the last 2 years, shoulder, in like
bizarre
surgery.
Bizarre
injury with the knife
hand,
incident
the knife,
at the restaurant, whatever. Like, but he's like, you never get yourself training, being feeling good. You're always kind of behind the eight ball. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's Kesselring this year for us. That's what I was looking at, is he never got himself going. And although I think he'll have a big part of this blue line moving forward, now we are in basically end of February, early March. We don't have a lot to the regular season left and open playoffs. I think this is where, like, if you're Jarmo Kekäläinen, you got to say, okay, we need depth on the blue line because maybe Kesselring is not going to give us the hockey that we wanted for him this year, but it's just the circumstances of what happened. So I think that's where I'm looking at.
That's why it's always hard to talk, and I get it. Everybody has lives. You can't possibly know everything about everything every year. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to wide brush any commentary historically for me because there's always stories within the big story.
Yeah.
You know, like history's not going to – like what if the Sabres go on to win the Cup? Like, people aren't going to be talking about the challenge of Michael Kesselring that year. You know what I mean? But, like, everybody has all these challenges.
But it's there.
It's real. But he might not be a huge part of it, right? Like, maybe – or maybe he ends up being a hero and everybody forgets, like, the 82 games that preceded the playoffs. Like,
guys calling up, like, Josh Dunn and whatever, right?
And if I just made you veer off the road because I said Sabres and winning the Cup, like, does it surprise you that they apparently – producer Sam validates this – 10th best odds to win – the Stanley Cup, tied with three other teams at plus 4,000. And who are the three other teams?
I'm a little surprised at that. 10th best odd, although
they've been
because the East is so tough.
But they've been hovering in the standings between like 9th overall and 12th overall for over a month.
Lindy Ruff is the leading odds candidate for the Jack Adams Trophy
right now. So the Sabres are plus 4,000 to win the Cup. Who are the other three teams at plus 4,000?
I'm going to say like Pittsburgh, Boston, maybe a Western team in there. That would be like my guess. Teams that are in and around there.
Capitals.
Okay. They're not even a playoff spot right now.
Not yet. The Mammoth.
They are in a playoff spot, I believe.
Mm-hmm. This one is most interesting. Most interesting.
The Florida Panthers.
Right division, wrong team.
The Toronto Maple Leafs.
Right division, wrong team.
Montreal.
Montreal.
Okay.
And I think because of everything we've seen the last 2 years and already the entirety of the season series between the Canadiens and Sabres and their age and the standings just 2 points apart, I think that's really, really, really interesting that both of these teams find themselves in this spot entering the final week of February.
I may have put Montreal a little ahead.
Right.
But to know that the odds maker are seeing the push from the Sabres the last, you know, 2 months and what that caused.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a big jump to be 10th in the odds for the Stanley Cup right now.
There is Zach Metsa rolling on by.
I know. And aforementioned Michael Kesselring, too.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Big guy.
Don't forget coaches.
Yeah, coaches, obviously. The two mics are going by. Bills and Ansel.
Two mics are hot right
two
here.
Two mics.
We're going to add
a... You guys could run a show, guys. You call it the two mics.
Oh, they have their own podcast. Apparently, we need to steal some content from it. And we definitely want you in the building when the Sabres return home, but not only for the end of this season, next year as well. So, season ticket memberships. They include playoff priority, Sabres store and concession discount, exclusive member-only events and experiences, guaranteed same seat for every game, dedicated account manager, much more. You can become a member today at sabres.com/membership. Our friends at Trusted Talent played a big role in helping our community here at the arena this morning. Their CEO, Martin Vidal, comes up next on Sabres Live.